This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Today's show is the second in a series called Creative Obstacles, a series about how our personality can get in the way of our creating. Today, in a show adapted from an essay in my book, A Writer's San Francisco, we look at the difficulties of moving from dreaming to doing. The show is called Fearing Difficulty. Let's begin. I've been teaching at Jane's for the past several years. Some writers teach at great universities or at world-renowned retreat centers. I teach in Jane's quirky San Francisco cottage that is guarded by a cat and that features bathroom doors that don't quite lock and a living room decorated with stiletto heels and erotic prints. At which venue would you rather teach? I think it's no contest. One of the odd results of teaching for Jane is that I see myself everywhere I go. Jane tacks up flyers to announce her classes, and she is relentless in posting them. So when I enter my cafe, my grocery store, or my gift shop, there I am, smiling back at me in a 15-year-old headshot that I had taken when my first nonfiction book was published. I have seen that face a lot. I know it better than the face I see in the mirror, and as long as I continue using that ancient headshot, I am guaranteed that I will never age. Or so I tell myself. Jane's enterprise is called WritingSalons.com, with an S, as she must always remind folks. She offers a wide variety of classes, sponsors student readings in her living room, readings that are suffocating because hundreds fill a space meant for 20, and has recently branched out into another country, Berkeley. As a result of this expansion, I sometimes teach in my neighborhood, which involves only a stroll, and sometimes I must cross the bridge, which nowadays is an eye-popping experience, as a second Bay Bridge costing billions and billions is rising up beside the current one. Jane's cottage has two classrooms. One is a basement room next to the cramped quarters of a gentleman lodger who emerges from his narrow digs by way of a curtain that opens into the basement kitchen. This ghostly fellow pays part of his rent by helping Jane with classroom tasks, like heating the kettle and turning out the lights, so it is not unusual to trip over him at break or to hear the door lock behind us when we leave. We are used to him and know that he is a friendly ghost. The second classroom is Jane's living room upstairs. I teach from the window seat to students ensconced in love seats and mismatched chairs. It is a charming cottage living room, eclectically furnished and lovingly lit. Jane is the ghost on this floor. Her curtained bedroom abuts the living room. Usually she is away, but sometimes she is there and will pop out from behind her curtain to peek in and smile. She, too, is a friendly ghost. The class I've taught most often is called The Art of the Book Proposal. Folks come to learn what a nonfiction book proposal contains and entails. By the fourth or fifth week, half the students have vanished. They had hoped that the book proposal would demand less of them. The group of 13 shrinks to a mere 6 or 7. No matter. The only problem the remaining souls face is how quickly the task of bringing in snacks comes around. The only problem for me is that I grow a little sad, knowing that those who jump ship have disappointed themselves, no doubt for the umpteenth time. The first night of class, all is possibility. At the end of the evening, I assign a little homework. The second night, 2 or 3 people are missing. Possibility has begun its inexorable slide into difficulty. We talk about things like building a platform, preparing a marketing plan, researching the territory that the writer's book will inhabit, articulating the writer's credentials. The next week the class is a little slimmer. A few people are still enthusiastic, but for many, resignation has set in. They are nevertheless happy at break, even the resigned ones. The break is a time for cookies, tea, gossip, and the pleasant ease of Jane's space. The gathered writers enjoy the warmth of the cottage, the artifacts, the conviviality. How humane the break is! But then, like the drill sergeant I once was, I must drag them back to the tasks of the book proposal, to the soliciting of endorsements, to the annotating of the table of contents, to the choosing of a sample chapter to write. The bliss of the break is quickly a distant memory. Each new class starts on the same high note, but even there, right at the beginning, shadows already intrude, and two or three people will come late, and one or two will be absent. These early casualties are already wrestling with themselves, doubting themselves, wishing they had signed up for yoga instead. They are already disengaging. Sometimes one will act aghast, as if she had no idea that I might suggest that participants work on their book proposal in a book proposal class. This aghast reaction is invariably a prelude to the demand of a refund. Jane is prepared for this. Her refund policy has been hammered on the anvil of 100 such regrets and denials. Do not flee the encounter. Do not fear difficulty. Do your creative work bravely, because creation is all about courage.
Listen to Living Green, Effortless Ecology for Everyday People, a weekly online audio program featuring champions of sustainable living at personallifemedia.com.
That concludes today's show. I invite you to come back next week for another episode in the series. To subscribe to The Joy of Living Creatively, please visit personallifemedia.com, where you'll also find my blog. You can drop me an email at eric@personallifemedia.com, and I hope that you'll visit my website to learn more about my books and services. That's ericmaisel.com, ericmaisel.com. Thank you for listening.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.